The 68th Annual Laureate Awards are set for March 19, 2026, at the iconic National Building Museum in Washington, D.C. This is the night to celebrate the extraordinary achievements shaping the future of aviation and aerospace. From innovation to leadership, the Laureate Awards honor the pioneers redefining what's possible. Be part of this unforgettable evening. Register now at laureates.aviationweek.com. That's laureates.aviationweek.com. Don't miss it.
Hello, and welcome to this edition of Check 6. We're recording this one from the AIAA SciTech Forum in Orlando, Florida. I'm Guy Norris, Senior Editor, and with me here, of course, as always, to cover this fantastic show is Graham Warrick, our Executive Editor for Technology. So, Graham, I mean, what have we seen here? It's been quite remarkable, hasn't it, this week?
Well, yes, it's been quite a bounce back for AIAA conventions. Obviously, you and I were together in Las Vegas middle of last year at the Aviation and Ascend shows, and it was pretty quiet because it was in the middle of all of the turmoil that had hit the U.S. government after the new administration came in. And so there was almost nobody there from NASA, and there was a much reduced sort of military contingent. Well, we've seen quite a bounce back this time.
Yes, you're right. In fact, and just to put that in context, although the actual attendance numbers are slightly lower than they were last year, we're still talking about over 6,000 registered attendees and over 100 companies and organizations and universities and so forth exhibiting here at the forum as well. It is slightly lower because the NASA numbers are slightly lower. They were severely cut back in terms of their attendance. But as I said, over 6,000 overall, of which a third, fully 2,000 of them, were students.
This is sort of a coming of age event for a lot of aerospace students. They come here, they do present their papers. They also listen, you know, they go around all of the technical sessions, but also there are sort of like recruitment events. There are the booths where people are sort of like, you know, showing their wares, but they're also on the lookout. So the student part of this has become a very important part. And this is probably, I think, a record for the number of, certainly the ratio of students to professional attendees, if you see what I mean. So it's a big part of what goes on here.
And what about the major sort of themes of the conference? Have you sort of picked up? I mean, you know, I know I can talk until the cows come home about the propulsion stories that we're seeing here, but and events. But you know, you're seeing some
big. So I will hand back to you for propulsion, because I think it's always been clear that propulsion is important to aviation. But I think at a show like this, it's just so much of the content is revolves around propulsion as we try and move to the next generation of aircraft. It just shows you that, and you know, I mean, I was looking it up before I came here. You know, we invented the swamp wing, but it didn't really come into any use until we had the jet engine. So it's the engine that's the unlock, you know, with all of this. And so a lot of that goes on here. But just generally, you know, there was there's an awful lot about speed, about moving at speed. So it's all about design processes, design tools, AI in design, and how do you move faster. The startups are much, much more in evidence here than in it. I've seen anything. We had keynotes from Anduril, we had keynotes from Shield AI, we had keynotes from Will Roper at Astari Digital, all of whom are sort of high energy, you know, sort of almost like it's almost like you're at a CES show or a TED Talk type of thing, instead of the traditional sort of engineering sort of presentations. So they've become a big part of it. They're a big part of the recruitment story as well. You know, the guy from Anduril said they were besieged on the first day. So that's a big change. But to me, what I'm hearing is a lot about the velocity of that's being asked of the industry to begin to move faster, which has me ask us some interesting questions, which we could talk about later. But I would also just underline that, you know, that propulsion is a huge part of what goes on here.
Yeah, absolutely. And just before we forget, we did in fact talk to Clay Mowry, who's the CEO of AIAA. We kind of got a few comments really looking at perhaps the big picture from his perspective. And this is what he had to say.
You know, I'm always measuring ourselves, AIAA against IEEE and the mechanical, all the other societies that are out there. I'm always measuring. And I had a couple of students yesterday remark, they were like, this is better than, you know, I went to this other show. I'm not an aerospace engineer, but I came here and boy, this was kind of fun. So I'm glad about that. That's having a better, we call it user experience, customer experience, the CX, the UX. We're striving with that here to make this thing like the best day of your life when you come here as a young engineer, and that you're learning. It's a learning environment. It's interesting. I view this from my, you know, I spent 25 years in the commercial space industry, mostly in sales and marketing and business development activities. A lot of those they're trade shows. They're really a show floor, a trade show. This is a learning show. This is somewhere you come as an event to really get smart and really understand what the trends are on the front end. And that's where we want to be. We want to be thought leaders on this, and we want the user experience to be such that as a student or anybody that comes from industry or universities goes, wow, you know, I left that way. I'm a smarter person at the end of this. And I furthered my career, right? Yeah, that's the point for us.
What people need to, who haven't had the chance to come here, really need to sort of think about is the fact that this doesn't cover just air breathing, propulsion, or any aircraft per se, but spacecraft as well. So in space, propulsion, and new concepts that are still kind of pie in the sky a little bit, but we've seen the reemergence perhaps here of a strong space nuclear propulsion sort of set of talks as well. But I think, you know, what you mentioned there correctly is right. You know, the how propulsion has really been the sort of the element that really pushes the whole industry forward. And as we do look towards the next generation, one of the most interesting sessions that we both sat through some of this was updates on the European Clean public-private partnership, which is really driving the R&D in Europe. And it's been a really useful update, wasn't it, across the boards on that, because we're not just talking about technology for the next generation single aisle, which is really where a lot of their effort has been focused, but also on the advances for hybrid electric propulsion, which really is going to probably make its start and its meaningful impact in the regional market probably first. But this is a great venue for hearing updates.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting because obviously, NASA is back here. We've seen some of the folks, our familiar faces from NASA back here. But of course, they're still adapting to the... So they had they took a big cut in their budget, but Congress looks like it's going to put the budget back. So it's still in flux where NASA's going to put its money. But of course, Jared Isaacman has said he wants to do X-planes. He wants to do kind of like breakthrough technologies. So it'll be interesting. Maybe in a year's time, we'll get a better idea as to where NASA wants to focus. But so the Europeans at the moment give you a more concrete view of the future. But this is what interests me. So this is all thing about velocity and speed. So a lot of presentations about how to go faster in aerospace, you know, not physically in the sky, but to actually design and develop aircraft faster. And you can see kind of why the Defense Department, the Department of War wants to do that with a defense customer because of the threat from China. And, you know, but I'm beginning to ask this question, you know, what's the use of going faster if your customer doesn't want to go faster? And so I was asking, you know, talking to the Anduril guy, you know, who was going on about how quickly they developed their YFQ-44 collaborative combat aircraft. And I was saying, you know, but what's going to happen about operational test and evaluation? Because that's usually where everything slows down. You know, it's a very laborious process that every weapon system has to go through. And he says that's still being discussed with the Air Force. But he says he gets the sense from the Air Force that they may be willing to take a system that maybe isn't as thoroughly wrung out. I don't know what the right word for it is. So operational testing determines the operational capability and the operational suitability. And even big weapon systems sometimes don't do too well in that evaluation. But he says that there's this whole thing about this 80% solution, you know, let's not push for the absolute thing. And he says, you know, it's possible that the Air Force, when it comes to CCAs, because they'll make them in such large numbers, they'll accept some, you know, that they maybe they're not as reliable as a exquisite weapon system, because if they push them through the same operational test and evaluation thing, it will take years to get these things into the field, and they don't want it to take years. But then I look at the civil side, and they're also talking about faster development, faster design. But you look and you say, well, hang on a minute, you know, they're now talking about Airbus and Boeing, a new airplane in 2038. And that's for two reasons. One reason is their backlogs are so big. And secondly, the airlines don't really want an airplane. They want to keep their airplanes for a certain amount of time and get value out of them before they change them. They don't want a new airplane every 5 years. That's not what they say. So there is a natural pace to the market. And I kind of look at the civil market and thought, wait, where is the value of going faster? Maybe it allows you to make decisions later, let the technology mature more. Maybe it lets you ramp up faster when you finally decide what you make. I don't know, but I'm just looking at this desire to go fast. And then I'm looking at the customer thinking, is the customer ready if the industry goes fast?
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. I mean, what we really did see was, as you mentioned, everybody seemed to just say, forget 2035, it's going to be more like 2038 or 2040. And I think you're right. You know, a lot of what we've seen also is probably using this extra time to make whatever they do come much better than what could have been possible, say, even in the early 2030s. And also, you've quite right to mention production readiness, because everybody's building into their assessments production from the get-go, which is sort of only now being reached again post-COVID in Airbus and Boeing. So, you know, in Airbus is targeting notionally up to 1,000 single aisle aircraft a year from this new. So just diving into that alone, you know, can you imagine the complexities of phasing one out? So yeah, I think that's where it's going to go.
It is good, you know. So clean sky, clean aviation as it is now, finishes in 2030. So it'll have all these technologies: open rotor, hybrid electric ducted fan, you know, advanced wing designs, advanced composite fuselage designs will all be, in essence, ready to go into development in 2030. But if Airbus doesn't need an airplane till 2038, what do you do for the next 5 years, you know? So the question then becomes, you know, yes, you've got it to that point. What do you do? And they're beginning to think about what comes after clean aviation. It's going to be very interesting to see what they do. You know, as I was talking to Axel Krein, who's the executive director of clean aviation, you know, in this, they're still formulating the next program. But you know, he acknowledged when I asked him, it's the beginning of the wide-body replacement cycles will start around then. So maybe it's wide body technologies they want to look at. Maybe it's hybrid wing, blended wing body that they want to look at. Or maybe it's taking the technologies they've done in clean aviation and taking them to a higher level of readiness. You know, he said he looks at what Jet Zero is planning with its demonstrator, which is the scale and size and shape and everything of the product. So it retires a lot of the risk. Maybe that's what they need to do, is to take all these technologies and get them into a platform, a demonstrator or something that gets closer to what maybe that... I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see.
And another thing that I think was interesting to emerge was this new real potential anyway for a multi-fuel option, which would, you know, be something that's very an interesting way to perhaps adapt to, you know, more sustainable fuels in the future. I mean, we've discussed a lot about hydrogen potentially, but also liquid natural gas has been mentioned. And whatever it is, whatever it's, you know, this bridge to sustainable or synthetic aviation fuel, as it's been called more here, you're not going to see a sort of a switch flipped. We already know that. And everybody's trying to get their heads around, how do you transition this massive fleet of, what, 20 plus thousand commercial aircraft to running on an all-new fuel? Yeah. And maybe there's some merit in it. You know, obviously, we don't have time to delve into it now on the podcast, but we will be trying to explain this on the website, on the magazine.
It's behind this renewed interest in hybrid, because, again, it's a way to transition the industry from one state to the next. And, you know, they're realizing now that the ecosystem has to be ready for the new technology, and it's going to take time, longer for their ecosystem to get there than it is to get the technology ready. So they're looking for these transition scenarios. Yeah. How do we get from A to C? You know,
right. And of course, we've spent all this time talking about the commercial side with a little bit of CCA in there, but there are other aspects too that we, the good old rocketry side of it here. And very importantly, because rockets will celebrate their 100th year this year, marking the anniversary of when Robert Goddard, of course, launched the first liquid rocket in 1926. One of the things that I thought was interesting early on in the event was that Andy Lapser, who's the founder of Stoke Space, gave an interesting update on the Andromeda and Zenith rocket projects that they're developing for the Nova vehicle, which is due to launch not far from here maybe by the end of the year, this year. And we also had an interesting talk by Peggy Whitson, who of Axiom Space, who really gave a pretty good sort of update on the space station plans that they planned. They're the only ones that actually going to leverage the existing ISS, the International Space Station, just before that's really sunsetted and decommissioned in 2030. So, there was some good stuff there. I think the other, there was lots of interesting talks about still looking at Mars and the Moon in situ resource utilization studies, the development of potentially much larger hypersonic decelerators for getting big payloads to the Martian surface, which of course will be totally needed if we're serious about human occupation on Mars. So you name it, you can find a paper about it here. NASA's plans for RDRs, which are sort of basically rotating detonation rocket engines. They're really going gung-ho on this now, as of course the defense industry is pivoting in some cases towards it too. And it looks like they're going to go for a full-up engine demonstrator in 2028, which isn't just the actual core of an RDR, this is the whole engine, built around it. So all kind of things. I suppose just the final area, there is one for me, the nuclear thing. I did mention it briefly, but...
Guy, I wouldn't expect you to go sign off for that talking about nuclear.
Yeah, right. I thought what was interesting about it was that the fact that there's a lot of enthusiasm, particularly, the NASA-led talk about this. And what was interesting to me was that they seemed to remember that there was the DARPA-NASA DRACO program, which was basically shelved last year. And they decided that it turns out NASA's basically retained the assets that were being developed, some of them at least, for the DRACO program, and they're going to use those in pursuit of continuing this development. So I think, that's still optimistic. There's still some signs that it could really happen, at least towards a, proper cohesive plan towards getting a flight demonstrator going again, including the roadblock, which is how do you do some Earth surface ground-based testing without, stumbling across all of the issues there. So that, I think those are the main areas I wanted.
No, you've hit on it. There was a lot of talk about AI, and interestingly, one of the speakers on AI made this connection between AI and fusion. Said he thinks that AI is the thing that will unlock get us to fusion. So we may be moving, in your nuclear focus, we may be moving to fusion over time.
Fantastic. Okay, well, thanks, Graham. And that's a wrap for this episode. Thanks, obviously, to our producer, Guy Ferniehow in London, and, of course, to all of you listening. If you haven't already, be sure to follow Check 6 on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever else you listen to your podcasts. And if you found today's discussion helpful, please consider leaving us a star rating or a review. Better yet, share this episode with a friend or colleague. Anyway, that's a wrap again. Bye for now.
The 68th Annual Laureate Awards are set for March 19th, 2026, at the iconic National Building Museum in Washington, D.C. This is the night to celebrate the extraordinary achievements shaping the future of aviation and aerospace. From innovation to leadership, The Laureate Awards honor the pioneers redefining what's possible. Be part of this unforgettable evening. Register now at laureates.aviationweek.com. That's laureates.aviationweek.com. Don't miss it.